Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We have observed a new boson with a mass of 125.3 plus or minus 0.6 GeV at 4.9 standard deviations. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, if you can understand it. Yesterday's announcement from physicists at the CERN Research Center in Geneva, they confirmed it, sort of. The Higgs boson has been found. Joining us now to explain the announcement and why there's so much hedging, in layman's terms, is Dr. Lisa Randall, professor of physics at Harvard University and author of Knocking on Heaven's Door, How Physics and Scientific Thinking Illuminate the Universe and the Modern World. And maybe she'll explain why the headline on this in the papers today is Key to the Universe Found. Welcome back, Professor.
I'm so happy to be here, and I'm really excited about this announcement.
And listeners, our phone lines are open now for any questions you have about the Higgs boson. We have physicist Dr. Lisa Randall here to answer them, as I said, and so this is your chance to understand the key to the universe. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, Dr. Randall, are they right? Is this a big deal, is all that?
You know, it really is a big deal, and I have to say, I wasn't actually anticipating an actual discovery. I thought we would have some evidence that there was real mounting evidence that there would be a new particle, but the fact that we've really discovered something so fundamental, and really that we didn't know was there. We know elementary particles have masses. We know about a mechanism called the Higgs mechanism through which they acquire their masses. But we really didn't know for sure that the Higgs boson, the particle that really looks like a Higgs boson, is part of it. Now, mind you, we still really do have to test the properties of this particle in detail, but there really is a discovery, and it really looks very much like the Higgs boson.
Before we go any further, what is a boson?
So quantum mechanics divide the particles into two different types, fermions and bosons. One way to understand the difference is through intrinsic quantity called spin. Another way is maybe a little more familiar. You've heard perhaps that bosons can be in the same place and fermions cannot. And what's really interesting, it's not just a boson. It's a fundamental scalar. It's something that if you rotate it, it just doesn't change if you did a rotation. And so far, there are no known fundamental scalar particles. That is to say, every other particle that we know about is either like a photon, which actually has something called spin 1, or a fermion, which has something called spin half. This would have spin 0. So it really would be this probably doesn't sound like it matters, but it really would be a new type of particle that just has not been seen before, in addition to sort of being this missing link in what we call the standard model of particle physics.
The missing link. In other words, this goes further than any other discovery to confirm the Big Bang theory to explain the creation of matter in the universe?
Well, that's a bit of a leap in the sense that the Big Bang is about the beginning. So there's many ways in which it's a bit of a leap. I mean, really the Big Bang theory tells us how stuff has evolved late in the universe, and we can see that by looking at its gravitational effects in many ways and also some particle effects. But we don't need to understand necessarily how elementary particles acquire their masses to understand the Big Bang. We just need to know that they have masses. And it's important to realize that the physics builds on itself. You don't have to know the answers to all questions in order to be able to say something with certainty, like the universe acts as if there had been a Big Bang. However, if we really want to know where those masses came from and actually what happened at some stage in the evolution of the universe, when you can think of these particles getting their masses, then you would need to know about the Higgs mechanism and the Higgs boson. It is a particle that's participating in what we call the cosmological evolution, how things evolve. But we didn't unnecessarily need to know everything about it in order to talk about something like the Big Bang. We do need to know about it if we want to understand fundamental particle properties, really what is at the root of the matter we know about, what is essential to its properties, why they have masses they do.
Let's take a phone call. Elliot in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Elliot.
Thank you so much. Good morning. And Dr. Randall, it's nice to hear you on local radio, although I love to see you on television too. I am curious to know whether this discovery has any impact, and if so, what impact does it have on string theory?
You know, it's, again, we get back to this question of you don't need to necessarily have all the fundamental answers. In other words, these are very different scales. So string theory is operating at a very, very tiny scale. This is operating at a scale that we can actually probe with experiments. Of course, it will have an influence on string theory in the sense that string theory will have to contain this particle. It will have an influence once we go beyond understanding just the Higgs boson. We don't think of this as the end. We think of it as a beginning. And it could be if there's some exotic symmetry called supersymmetry, which might be part of string theory. It might be there's evidence for an extra dimension, which could be part of string theory. So it really what it does is it sort of tells you more about what string theory would have to contain. But in no way is it a discovery of string theory, because we can have this boson independent of how we solve this issue of quantum mechanics and gravity.
And before we get too excited about what we've really learned through the discovery of this boson, I want to play a clip of what the director general of CERN said after the announcement in Geneva yesterday.
As a layman, I would say we have it. But as a scientist, I have to say, what do we have? We have something, yeah? We have discovered a boson. And now we have to determine what kind of boson it is. That's in the scientist's language, so to speak.
So can you put that in the lay language, so to speak?
Well, I guess what he's saying is we've discovered a new particle. We discovered it because it decayed into other particles. You reconstruct what was there and find that there is a peak. That is to say, there are many decays that correspond to a particular mass for something that just didn't correspond to anything that we knew about before. It's something new, and it's a new particle that seems to have a definite mass. But the question is, what is that particle? And to answer that question, you need to know the way it interacts. The way it interacts, one way of knowing that is how often you make it, and another way is how often it decays. That is to say, the particle isn't stable. It turns into other particles. Sometimes it turns into two photons. Sometimes it can turn into particles called tau. It turns into other particles. And by measuring the ratio of the rate at which it does that, we learn, does it correspond to particles' masses? And if it does, that's strong evidence that it is the Higgs boson. But the question is, does it do it precisely in the way that we would assume for something which had just this Higgs boson? Or is it something more complicated? Like, are the ratios slightly off? Are they similar to what it would be, or are they slightly different? Or are they completely different in some cases? So because we're just discovering the particle, not all the different decays have been studied as well as they will ultimately be. And when they do that, we'll learn not just about the particle's mass, and we'll learn that much better. We'll also learn more about its interactions. And that's basically everything you can know about a particle. What's its mass and what are its interactions? And when we know that, we'll be able to say, does it conform to our expectations of a Higgs boson or not? And we have to say, so far, it looks very Higgs boson-like, but we don't know yet if that's really going to ultimately be the case.
Amy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Amy. Whoops. Hang on, Amy. Oh. All right, Amy, now we got you. I'm sorry.
Hi. I just want to ask how, in a theory, does the Higgs boson give mass to matter, and why wouldn't matter have mass without it?
And that's the relationship to the Big Bang theory, right, is that if this is a particle that gives mass to matter.
Well, you know, this is actually, it's actually a very good question, because it's a little deceptive, because, and it's often presented in a slightly confusing way, because the Higgs boson itself is not giving masses to particles after all. The particles have had masses long before we found the Higgs boson. It's the Higgs mechanism. Now, what's the difference? Well, you can think about it like there can be an electric field, but then sometimes you'll have individual photon particles that get created. And the same way you can have a Higgs field. It's a complicated notion. It's saying that there's no particles, but there's still a Higgs field. There's the vacuum, the state with no particles in it, actually has properties. And it is the interaction with this Higgs field actually is giving particles their masses. And we're fairly confident that that is actually how particles get their mass, by going through this Higgs field. But the question is, what were the particles that established those field, that field in the first place? And that's where the Higgs boson comes in. So really, by discovering Higgs boson, we're doing two things. We're establishing that that Higgs mechanism that we were fairly confident is right is in fact right. It's really experimental verification. But we also hope to find out how that Higgs mechanism is implemented. And that's where the particle comes in. It's a telltale sign that the mechanism is right, and it tells you how that mechanism was implemented.
So I understand, Dr. Randall, that a lot of physicists don't like this term, the God particle. I even understand that originally the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Leon Lederman, who wrote the book by that title, called it the goddamn particle because it's so hard to find, and that his publishers convinced him that God particle would sell more books. But it suggests that this particle somehow tells us how the universe began. What do you think of that nickname?
I mean, I personally would prefer not having that name because I do think it builds up expectations a little bit inordinately. But it is associated with particles getting mass. It's a big deal. But so are many things. I mean, there are many elements that go into our universe. It's amazing how it fits together, and there are many essential elements. So I don't think we really want to single out one, especially if we're in a monotheistic world. I don't want to have one particle be the God particle.
In a monotheistic world, that's very funny. If we lived in a polytheistic world, then everything's the God particle.
We have lots of God particles.
If we live in the pantheist,
I think we should just stay away from it.
Yes, if the polytheistic world, then there are lots of God particles. If it's the pantheistic world, then everything is the God particle. But does this change the meaning of life in any way? Should people go to church on Sunday and ask, "What about the Higgs boson?"
If their church is going to a particle accelerator and trying to understand what's going on there, I'm very happy about people learning more about science, but I don't think they need to know more religion. But if they want to learn more about science, that's one of the reasons I wrote books, and it's one of the reasons I'm here now. I think there really are so many interesting things, and when you just hear this tail end, you're like, what is this? How does this fit together? And it really is nice to get a story and to understand how this fits into what we knew before. And why this is now the question we're asking.
You know,
and I think that's a very nice direction for people to go in.
Science journalists have been using a lot of descriptive language to get the point across for their audiences. We think the New York Times really did wonders with this sentence, for example, that's in today's paper. Like Omar Sharif materializing out of the shimmering desert as a man on a camel in Lawrence of Arabia, the elusive boson has been coming slowly into view since last winter as the first signals of its existence grew until they practically jumped off the chart. So, Dr. Randall, before you go, beat that.
Yeah, you know, that's a hard one to beat. You know, I could just do it in maybe a pragmatic term, which is really sort of what's going on. So maybe just to bring it a little bit more home, because I do love that poetic image. But, you know, you might be told to meet someone, and it turns out you're meeting them in a stadium. So it's full of people. And you're trying to hear your friend's voice over the din of all these other voices that are there. And that's really, it's not just that the Higgs boson is hard to find. It's that there's so many things that could look like a Higgs boson. And we're trying to find Higgs boson over what we call background, standard model stuff that's there anyway. So you know what your friend's voice should sound like. You're listening carefully. But there are many other voices that sound like it. But then eventually you can really single it out. You get close enough, you get enough evidence, and then you go there, and of course it is your friend, and then you've really found it.
It is your
so
friend.
And maybe then not as poetic, but maybe
really found
a little
it.
Bit.
Says Dr. Lisa Randall, author of Knocking on Heaven's Door, How Physics and Scientific Thinking Illuminate the Universe and the Modern World. She's a physics professor at Harvard. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we do apologize for having our most complicated possible segment on our worst possible phone.